Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
News to report tonight, and obviously it's exciting to be back in the win column again. I think the team is finally starting to turn the corner a little bit. I'm not going to use those two dreaded words, we're back, because we're not, but we're definitely on the path. I see a lot of positive signs of the team growing up, and so we're going to definitely recap the Kansas State game. And And like I said last week, I felt comfortable that we were going to beat them. This is not the K-State teams we've seen in the past. They are not very good, and we kind of showed that. I think the only reason it was as close as it was is because of the weather. I think if it's a dry field, I think it even we score two or three more touchdowns, and this thing is worse than it was. But we'll recap that. We're going to talk about the big Halloween game coming up. This Saturday up at Ames, it'll be Halloween, so it'll be spooky. But again, they've got some controversy. They fired the big man. They got a new quarterback. So we'll discuss that and see if the Horns can continue their mini win streak and get it to three. As always, joining me up in Fort Worth tonight, it's Matt. And how's it going tonight?
It's going great. Nice to be on a winning streak again.
Yeah, we have not been able to say that very often the last few years, but yes, it felt good, and that's exactly where we'll start tonight. Is we'll kind of recap the Kansas State game, and it played out about how I expected. And obviously, once we knew the weather was going to be what it did, and the weather did not disappoint. The forecasters got it right. It rained at 100% the entire time. It never did really come down just crazy, but it never was just drizzling. It was a steady 3.5 hour rain out there, obviously, with all the commercials the game had. We didn't have to throw the ball much. We did hit a few passes. Kansas State was pretty much bogged down. They hit a play here and there. Again, positive signs from the offensive line. Another game, almost 300 yards rushing. I think we have figured out the running game and what Hurd can do. And, you know, I think in the next few weeks, because of this running game, I feel real confident that we're going to start seeing some downfield throws to Burt, to Johnson, Newsom, and even Foreman in the passing game, because teams now are just going to have to come up and put 8-9 people, because I saw Kansas State put 6 or 7. We were still able to run the ball. OU tried that in the second half. We were still able to run the ball. So I don't know if it's our offensive line is just improving that much, if it's our scheme, if it's our effort. But I'm going to go on the record now, probably jinxing us, but the running game is real, Matt. I mean, it is tough to stop it.
Yeah, and it's. I think what's interesting to me is it comes at you in a lot of different packages and directions. So we can run the well, I guess technically it's a pass play, but it's kind of like the fly sweep to Dajae. You can run Foreman and Gray between the tackles. Hurd can scramble. So it's not like we're just picking. And then, of course, obviously, I got to talk about the 18-wheeler. You can't. I mean, that so far has been basically unstoppable with that power package. So there's a lot of different ways we can attack the run game. Which is nice. It's not just one formation or one approach. It's all over the place.
It is, and yeah, the 18-wheeler package, I went back and rewatched the game on the computer and really watched all of the plays that, that Swoops were in. And, you know, I mean, it's like the defense knows where it's coming, they know it's coming, and they just still can't stop it. And I love the play to where he takes a stutter step and then heads back the other way, and then the offside, the off guard, the fullback goes up in the hole with three blockers, they kick out. And, I mean, it's just, I mean, he gets his momentum going. He's going to fall forward for 2, 3, 4 yards. If you hit him at the line of scrimmage after he's at full speed, it's a 3 or 4 yard gain. Now, if they catch him in the backfield before he gets his momentum, that's where, you know, he can't change directions before. But once the full steam starts moving forward, if you make contact at the line of scrimmage, he's falling forward for 3, 4, and sometimes 5 yards. So it's the perfect package. You know, when you need 1, 2, 3 yards and inside the 5 yard line in the red zone. So, but I like your point there. Yeah, again, you know, you've got Hurd speed, you've got the power with Foreman, and then we saw Chris Warren a little bit, and then obviously with Gray, he's still got a little quickness. He doesn't have his top end speed, and then you have the outside speed with DJ. So yeah, we're basically, you know, for a lack of better terms, you know, the spread is you know, teams like Baylor, they throw the ball a lot. They're a spread passing team. We're a spread running team is what we are. I mean, it comes at you a lot of different directions with power. But I think now that we seem to have that going and it looks like we're pretty good at it, I think now we're hitting it to where you're going to slowly see Norville and Traylor open up the passing game, and we're going to start to see some receivers running wide open down the field as teams start to come up and try to stop the run. I think that's what you're going to see against Iowa State, because obviously they've got one of not only the worst defense in the Big 12, one of the worst in the country, and their passing defense is atrocious. So, again, we'll talk about Iowa State in a minute, but I think that's exactly how we're going to attack them. And obviously with Kansas State, I mean, sometimes they had 8, 9, 10 guys up, and we were still able to bust 10, 15, 20, 30-yard runs. And then we did hit them over the top a couple times for some nice passing plays. You know, we were right at 100 yards passing. We just didn't need to. And I did not mind that strategy against K-State because of the rain. Just get the win, stay healthy, and get out of there, because I think it became fairly evident early, other than, you know, a few plays here and there, that Kansas State was just not going to put together an 80-yard drive or any consistency on offense at that point. So, I mean, at that point, the game was over once we got a 2-touchdown lead. I mean, yeah, anything can happen, but, you know, we didn't have any turnovers. Yeah, if we would have turned the ball over, it would have changed. But basically, we play clean football there, run the ball a little bit. There was no way K-State was going to win that game.
No, I agree 100%. And especially, like you said, when you throw the weather in there, I mean, if you start going crazy and trying to run your full offense, that's where you maybe gift them a couple things, and they're still Kansas State. If you give them some chance or give them some life, they're sure going to take advantage of it. So, yeah, during the game, I never really felt, even when it was, within, I guess, a touchdown at one point or a couple touchdowns, I just never really felt like I needed to get real nervous. I would have liked to put them completely away a little bit earlier, but, I think you're right. The weather, I think, had something to do with that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty nasty. I sat through the entire game other than halftime. I did walk back up under and grab something to eat, and I even stayed a little bit after the game to sing the eyes. So, but, yeah, I mean, it was a steady, pretty good rain, and I was covered up pretty well, and I was still a wet noodle. It was a little windy at times, a little gusty. I don't know what the real attendance was. I think they, said 88,000. There definitely wasn't no 88,000 in there. I guess if I was throwing a dart at it, 55,000, I think it was right around there. It may have pushed 60. I don't think it was in the 40s, mid-40s. Maybe it was low 50s, but it was somewhere within there, 7,000 or 8,000 either way. But I will say this, the people that were in there, it sometimes it sounded louder with the people that were there than it did when we've had 100,000, and I'm going to talk about that for a second, because the people that obviously were there and showed up for that were the people that are the loudest, regardless of how great the weather is. The diehards were there. The sit on their hands, you know, people just didn't, they didn't show up. So, again, they weren't missed because they don't scream anyway. So that's why it sounded the same. I mean, there was as much noise when there needed to be from the 55,000, 60,000, when sometimes there's 90-plus thousand, which is a positive, for great for the people that showed up. But, again, it's a negative, you know, basically when we have a full stadium, it's still, you know, the sucky atmosphere. And we've beat that conversation to death, but so we're not going to rehash it. But I did want to make that point that those that were there were pretty dadgum loud, and it was a good atmosphere.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think we've seen that before in games like that. I think we were reminiscing about previous weather games like Iowa State, when they cleared the stadium and maybe half the fans came back. The people that came back made just as much noise as the full stadium earlier in the day.
All right, well, let's shift gears. And before we, you know, talk about Iowa State, I do want to talk about a little bit just the Big 12 in general. You know, where I think the Big 12 is headed. We've got Baylor currently sitting there at 4-0, TCU's at 4-0, Oklahoma State's at 4-0, so they're all up there, and obviously none of them have played each other. So the next 3 or 4 weeks, it's going to shape out. Then you got Oklahoma sitting there at 3-1, and then we're there at 2-2. And I, you know, it's going to start to eat me up now because we should be sitting there at 3-1. That damn Oklahoma game is just going to, Oklahoma State game is going to haunt me now until the end of the year. I was hoping to let it go, but it's going to really haunt me now. But, and you know, and I was going to say this, at least our punter redeemed himself. You know, we had the bad snap this game, and obviously he, you know, got it off, and it ended up, we got a great roll, so a disaster turned into about a 60-yard plus punt. So at least he didn't panic this time. He did figure it out. So kudos to the young man there. And then you got Texas Tech at 2-3, and then, you know, who really cares about the last four? Iowa State 1-3, West Virginia sitting there at 0-3, K-State 0-4, and Kansas is 0-4. So, you know, it's playing out right now exactly how I predicted it. I was not high on West Virginia. I knew once they got into the meet, they're going to be 0-4 after this week. They play at TCU. We'll talk about all the predictions later. But I think this thing is going to be a lot more interesting now. Obviously, with, you know, Baylor losing their quarterback for the year, they're going to bring in a true freshman. Yes, he was a five-star. Yes, he was one of the number one, you know, depending on which ranking you look at, but, you know, number one or number two rated quarterback coming out of high school. He has all the tools. He's going to be a good one. Question for Baylor now, is it plug and play? Can he really step in and take off where Seth Russell was? I think in some instances, yes, he's got a good arm. They've got a good offensive line. But let's get real. He was playing high school football this time last year, and I think he's going to make some mistakes. He's probably not going to be as quick getting rid of the ball in some situations, so he's probably going to throw an interception. He's probably going to throw some incompletes on some things. So some series that may be touchdown drives or may pick up first downs are now going to be punts and three and outs, or, you know, they're not going to pick up the third and 10 like they would with Russell. So they're going to look – what I'm saying with Baylor is the way I see them play out is they're going to lose some offensive possessions. Instead of scoring 4 out of 8 possessions, it may go to 3 out of 8 now. I mean, they're going to still move the ball because they're a talented football team, and the defense is better than what Baylor has had. But I think they're going to lose some opportunities as a whole. You know, they're not going to be as explosive. Now, I may be perfect, come back after 2 weeks and say, my gosh, they hadn't missed a beat. But as I sit here today, I really believe that's what's going to happen. So you got Baylor with quarterback issues now. You got TCU with defensive issues that has not caught up to them yet. I think eventually it will. We're going to start to see that. And then Oklahoma State sits there at 4-0, and I just look at them. I saw them play us. They just keep winning, but I don't know how. I mean, their defense is obviously very good. Their offense is average. So I think they could drop some games. And then we get to our good friends of Norman, who we made look just pathetic. I think they're hitting their stride. So basically, I honestly feel, Matt, I mean, if we were at 3-1, even though we got blown out at TCU, if we beat Oklahoma State, I could honestly sit here and feel if we ran the table, we'd be in the Big 12, conversation. But we're not. But I think we're a notch under. But I think as it sits today, Oklahoma State, TCU, or Baylor, when we wake up, you know, Sunday, December 6th, I will not be surprised at this point now that any four of those teams are one of them is the Big 12 champion. And the champion has one loss, or we have two or three one-loss teams, and then what does that do now? Does the Big 12 get left out of a playoff again because of that? So does one of these teams have to run the table, Oklahoma State, TCU, or Baylor, to get the Big 12 in a playoff? So I know I just said a lot, so I'll let you dissect what I just said.
Well, yeah, I mean, the amazing thing about the scheduling is the Big 12 is going to get a whole lot of national attention in November because it's just one week after another, these showdown games. If they all take care of business and then lose to each other, and they're very good games, and people start talking about the Big 12 like they kind of did in 08, where, it was a revolving door at the top after, we beat OU, and then Tech beats us, and OU beats Tech. I mean, all of those teams still got a lot of national respect, and three mm-hmm. one-loss teams didn't matter. I think, where you start to see the wild cards is, if Oklahoma State loses to Tech this weekend, or if TCU drops to West Virginia, or somebody loses out of schedule, then it brings kind of the whole thing down. And then if they're all sitting at one loss, or maybe one of those TCU or Oklahoma State or somebody has two losses now, I think people won't have that same, like, oh, this is murderer's row. They'll just say, well, it was a pretty good parity in that conference, but as a whole, there was no outstanding team, which is, I'm afraid with Baylor, obviously I'm not a Baylor fan at all, but what I saw of them against West Virginia and some of the little parts of other games I saw, I really thought maybe this is their shot. So I really, feel bad for them, because you don't want this thing settled by season-ending injuries, especially when you start talking about somebody's neck and, fractures and stuff like that. If you had asked me before the injury, I thought Baylor really had a great shot to actually run the table in this conference, which would have made them a slam dunk. I mean, they might have been the number one seed overall if they do that. But the cool thing is, I just, what I'm hoping for is good football. And, if we as a conference put on a show, I think even a one-loss team is going to have a good argument. And, of course, you got to look around and see what happens elsewhere. I think there's going to be a whole mess of one-loss teams, and then we're going to get back to the conference rah-rah stuff, which you love so much, because, people are going to start debating one-loss teams by, well, is the Big Ten better than the Big 12, or is the SEC better than the Pac-12, and all that nonsense.
Yeah, I really wish I felt better about, Baylor getting in the playoffs, or whatever, but, I don't really care if any of them get left out. It doesn't bother me. I guess it should, but I can't change my thought processes, But, let's look at Oklahoma's schedule. They got Kansas this week. Obviously that's a win. Then they got Iowa State. And then it gets real. They're at Baylor, TCU at home, at Oklahoma State for Bedlam. So Oklahoma's season is going to be defined in November, November 14th, 21st, and 28th. Three games in a row. They're going to know where they are after the 28th. They're going to have a very good indication. And, it sets up nicely for them. They get Baylor. They got to go to Baylor. They get TCU at home, so that's going to be a tough out for TCU up in Norman. And then they go to Oklahoma State, and I don't care. That's basically, there's not much home field advantage in Bedlam for me. Oklahoma State has dominated that series. Oklahoma State's won a few of them at late. Last year they got lucky with the punt return at the last second. So Oklahoma, if Oklahoma has – beats Baylor, beats TCU, and they're going into Oklahoma State with a chance to play for a playoff spot with their only loss to us, they're going to come out and play well. So, their destiny is obviously right in their hands. So, Oklahoma still has a ton to play for. And the same thing with Baylor. They still have TCU, Oklahoma State. All three of those teams all still have each other. So, like you said, November – if you are a Big 12 fan, it's getting ready to get real, and there's going to be some national exposure. And I don't care that they're Big 12 games. As a college football fan, I'm going to be, you know, glued to the set, you know, watching those games, because it's going to be, you know, top five, you know, top ten matchups. So it's going to be exciting football. And basically for those three teams, here in about 2 weeks, the playoffs have started, in effect. I mean, the playoffs are here for – I mean, it's already here. I mean, yeah, we're talking about a 14 playoff. For those three teams, the playoffs have started, because if either one of them lose one, they're probably out, especially for Oklahoma. So for Baylor and TCU,
well,
the playoffs
have started. Mike, that's what I was going to say, is that, you know, as Texas fans that are listening to this, the kind of the funny thing is, I think our victory over them at the fair is going to be the gift that keeps on giving throughout the rest of the year. Because if Oklahoma runs the table, I think of you know, as a one-loss team, they've still got the worst resume, because it'll mean they've got that loss to, you know, Texas sitting there. And if they're, let's say, Notre Dame's in the consideration, well, Notre Dame beat that same Texas team 38-3. So, I'm not saying Oklahoma's screwed, because there's a long way to go and God only knows what might happen, but they're really hurt. Whereas if Baylor, TCU, Oklahoma State, their only loss is later in the year, but it's to one of these other top dogs in the conference, when you compare that. You know, if Oklahoma State runs the table, but their only loss is to Baylor, and Oklahoma, obviously Oklahoma would have two losses at that point, but those other guys, if they lose to one of the other top dogs, they still got a decent argument, depending on, you know, how the stupid tiebreaker works out with the conference.
Well, let me go into some breaking volleyball news. Number 2 Texas volleyball just fell 3 sets to 0 to TCU. Horns now 8-1 in Big 12 conference play. I was going to bring this up earlier. It just seems with our volleyball team, which is, you know, has been so dominant, I guess going on a decade now, really, they always have that one game in the Big 12 every year. Last year it was against Oklahoma. They got swept. This year it's against a horrible TCU team that they come out and lay an egg. And I like what some people on Twitter are saying. You know, it's like Elliott just doesn't care and just has one game where he just doesn't try to win it, just to re-motivate his team. And, you know, you start to say, well, there's no way a coach would do that. But, I mean, I think this is 3 or 4 years in a row they've done this, and they go on and win the rest of their games. But they looked atrocious. I watched a little bit of it on Longhorn Network. It didn't look good. They just did not play well tonight. So they got swept. But, again, no, don't panic. The volleyball team will be back. But it's just interesting that every year – they drop a Big 12 game against a team that they should probably destroy 99 out of 100 times. But it's, you know, it is what it is. We'll wake up in 5 weeks and they'll be in the Final Four, and we'll talk about it then. So the Big 12 race, back to the Big 12, it's definitely going to be fun to watch in November here, starting next weekend on the 7th and on out, because it is wide open. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, again, what Baylor does, if TCU's defense can hold up. And, you know, honestly, I think the team that benefits the most from Baylor losing their quarterback is a TCU, because I think Patterson still has some good players on defense, and I think he's going to be able to confuse the Stedman, you know, a little bit. And I think we benefit. I think the game, which may have, you know, had a, you know, depending on how he looks, a 14 or 15 point spread maybe moves to 7 now, because our defense is improving, and I feel confident that Strong and Befford can put together some coverages and some packages to confuse him. So, you know, the Horns just need to keep taking care of business. Well, now I'm going to shift gears and throw something at you, Matt, and I'll let you even go first. As a matter of fact, I'll go first, because you may have to think about it. We're about basically halfway through the season. I was going to do this last week, but we had so much to cover. Let's go with our offensive and defensive MVP, or it could be, you could have a co-offensive or co-defensive MVP. And I'm actually really got 2 on offense. And obviously my first choice is obviously, because this team would not be where they were at if Gerard Hurd doesn't step in and start playing like he plays. So I'm going with Gerard Hurd as obviously an MVP of the offense halfway through the season. And then I guess if you put Gerard, you know, 1A, I've got a 1B, and I'm going to have to go with the true freshman offensive lineman, Behe and Connor Williams. I mean, have they made mistakes? Have they missed blocks? But, I mean, for two 18-year-old guys to go from high school football, and even though they played big-time high school football, to step in and play at the level they have played the first half of the season. And I've really watched them a lot when I'm able to watch the game online and slow it down and go frame by frame. Man, those guys, I mean, they're both going to be all Big 12. I'm not going to be shocked if they're both not All-American and playing on Sunday here in a few years. I mean, we really hit the jackpot with offensive linemen with those two. Now, if we can just find a couple more around them, and I think they're a big part of why the offensive line is improvement. So that's my offensive guys. And then I'm going to give another award on offense or a team award. And since I'm talking about offenses, I'm going to give it to I'm just damn proud of the way you've handled yourself. And I'm going to tell you what, that's Tyrone Swoops. I have become a huge fan. I was down on him the way he was playing. I mean, it was atrocious. I think if you even asked him, he knew he wasn't playing well. He didn't handle it well. And I don't know if he took over the starting role tomorrow if he would play any better. But, I mean, when he was benched, he could have went off to the side and sucked. He could have quit. He could have transferred. He could have been a virus in the locker room. There's a lot of things he could have did. But I tell you what, he showed his character. He showed that, I mean, I may be his biggest fan now. That guy is cheering when the defense is on the field. He's cheering when the offense. He comes in there and he runs hard. He gives it his all for his package, and you can tell he's practiced it. I'm damn proud of Tyrone Swoops. So before we go to defense, I'll let you hit your offensive guys.
Yeah, let me just echo the Tyrone Swoops stuff because, first of all, I mean, I think really we might look back on this sometime down the road and talk about what a genius coaching move this was, just in general, to put this package together for the guy. Because, I mean, obviously a lot of the credit goes to him because he stayed engaged and you know, is a team player, you can tell that. But the coaches made damn sure that he was going to stay engaged because as soon as he lost the starting job, they cobbled together this 18-wheeler package. And I think not only was it great for Swoops, but it gave the team some identity. I think, you know, that Oklahoma game, especially when they rolled that out there in, you know, the biggest rivalry game of the year against Big Bad Oklahoma, and Swoops and company are just blowing people off the line. And Swoops is running over guys in the secondary two plays in a row. I mean, you know, would you have ever expected I'd even say that sentence about Swoops last year, you know, like just running people over and playing nasty? I mean, it just really, I think carried over to the entire team. It was like, holy crap, you know, I agree with what Strong has said is, you know, these guys just needed something to happen to go their way to feel like what they're doing is and all this work they're putting in is paying off. And I think that really was the eye-opening thing of, hey, you know what, we can play physical, nasty football. And there's teams, especially in the Big 12, that are geared up to stop the high-flying, you know, Boykins and Seth Ruffles of the world and Patrick Mahomes, is now you got to deal with these guys who are totally different, a totally different mindset you got to have on defense. So, you know, obviously Hurd's got to be number one. But another guy I'd throw into the mix there because he also had to change his role, and that would be Blewett from moving from the defense to the offense. He's made a couple of big catches. I know the first one he made, I couldn't believe he made. I think that was the Oklahoma State game. But I think he also brought some of that nastiness to the team. And, you know, you watch him, if he's in there blocking, dude, he's bringing it. And he's become kind of a leader on that offense as well. So he'd be a guy I'd definitely give an honorable mention on the offensive side.
Yeah, I think all those are good choices. Well, if we move to the defensive side of the ball, this is where it gets a little bit tougher. I mean, the obvious choice, you know, you could go with the Malik Jefferson. You know, Peter Jenkins has stepped up. Holton Hill stepping in, Davis, Duke Thomas. But the guy I'm going to go with, and, you know, I'm looking at the whole half of the season. You know, he had a slow start. But the number one reason this defense has looked the way it has from right before the Oklahoma game, you know, even at TCU, he played fairly well considering everybody else didn't. And then in the OU game, it started to blossom. And in K-State, he was unblockable again. And that is Hassan Ridgeway. I mean, he's the reason the defense is doing what it can do now, is because teams are not able to gash us up the middle. He has completely shut down the inside running game. And it's made it now where they've got to account for where he's at and put an extra man on him, because there's not one offensive lineman blocking him one-on-one. And I read an interesting quote today from some players, and they said, he's playing now in games like they all saw in practice, and almost every offensive lineman has echoed this, that when he wants to play, he's harder to block in practice than Malcolm Brown was last year, and we know what a high level he was played at. So by far, my defensive MVP so far is Hassan Ridgeway. And then obviously a close second is Malik Jefferson, and then Holton Hill at defensive back. What Holton Hill you're able to do now is just stick him outside on any receiver. And you're going to see that this week against some of them big 6'5", 6'4", receivers that Iowa State has. You can stick him outside, and you don't have to worry about him. He's going to cover. He's going to give up some plays, but, man, you can just put him on an island, and he's another true freshman that's going to play on Sundays. We've got some NFL talent with these freshmen. And then my defensive guy, I guess, True Grit Award, same thing as Tyrone Swoops, an older guy. All these, Wheeler, Freeman, Jefferson, all these young guys coming in to play on defense had a chance when he wasn't getting a lot of snaps early in the season. Really had a chance to go sit on the bench and whine and be a virus in the locker room, but know what he did. He got himself together, practiced hard, earned the respect of the defensive coaches, and when he got his time and we started getting more stats, he snapped up, and that's Peter Jenkins. He was a player that has not blossomed. I mean, came in with a lot of high hopes, showed flashes here and there, but then would go games and you would never see him. I think the fire that Malik Jefferson and all those freshmen and the accountability has pushed Peter Jenkins to be the best player he can be. And I think now there's a chance that he probably won't get drafted, but he's going to get invited to a camp as a free agent. And I think there's a good chance Peter Jenkins may be, if he can continue what he's done the last four games in an NFL training camp, he may just find himself on an NFL team. So, again, props to another senior for taking the tutelage of Strong and the younger guys and stepping up and getting your game right your last year. So good job, Peter Jenkins. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much nailed the ones I was going to cover. I think Peter Jenkins is a guy that I loved, when he first came onto the 40 acres. And he, you said it exactly right. He showed flashes, and I thought, oh, my God, this guy's going to be a monster by the time he's a senior. And I think he's one of these guys that just got lost in the shuffle of the, not only the coaching change from Mac to Strong, but also we flipped through defensive coordinators before Mac left. And I just think he got a little, I don't know, what's going on in his head, but I just feel like he got a little bit lost. But man, he's playing with heart. That's for sure. And that OU game, I mean, he was all over the place, and against K-State, he made plays as well. So definitely agree with that. I was going to say Holton Hill. I think Ridgeway is the obvious choice. And it's a beautiful thing about football is, it's 11 guys out there, but there's one or two linchpins, right, where if it's not happening, all of a sudden it makes other players look bad. Now the linebackers don't look as good if Ridgeway is not making any, pressure up the middle, because the linebackers are trying to overcompensate, or they're playing the run and they're biting on play action and they're doing all this stuff. Once your lines are performing, those guys, the other seven guys or so in the backfield, they can start focusing on what they need to focus on, and then all of a sudden, guys just start looking better. And I think a lot of times when we watch these games, we focus on, one player, and this guy's not having a good game, or this guy's struggling, but you got to kind of look at the big picture, because I've noticed the whole team looks a lot better, and I think you're exactly right that it starts with the anchors that we've got now at tackle. And you see, too, like Puna Ford making more plays. Other guys on the line are making more plays because Ridgeway is really the guy that starts the motor. And if offensive linemen are thinking about him or they're doubling him, now that's time for somebody else like Ford or Shiro or somebody like that to step up and make a play. And, Holton Hill, on the secondary. I mean, I'm just, you know, it's funny. As soon as you mentioned this question, I started rattling through names on the defense. And one interesting thing to me is it just seems like, you know, we haven't gotten entirely consistent, you know, on performance, but every week it seems like there's another guy that kind of just stands out, and there's a lot of them on that list. So, you know, guys are starting to develop, and, you know, you have the consistent guys like Duke Thomas, Malik, you know, they're kind of there every week. But some of these other dudes are stepping up, and Holton Hill's been almost up to that consistent level, and obviously had the big pick six against Oklahoma State. So I'm amazed. You know, we've seen some really good freshman cornerbacks or really good cornerbacks come through Texas that ended up playing in the league for 10 years, and as freshmen they were lost as can be. So the fact that these guys are actually balling out as freshmen, you know, that starts – I'm not comparing these guys and saying they're going to have the same career, but I look back at like Earl Thomas. That was a guy that from day one, he was awesome. But Cedric Griffin and some of these other guys, they went through some real struggles. And I think these guys are ahead of the curve right now, and hopefully they just keep developing. And they're going to be a pretty salty bunch here in a couple years.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, guy, when we look back, you know, several years from now, the one who, you know, has played a lot on special teams the last few weeks, and he hasn't been getting many snaps in the secondary, and I, you know, we all know why. He sent out the stupid retweet at halftime. It's frustration, but don't sleep on Chris Boyd. He may be the best of all of them that I mentioned. He's going to be a starter back there, probably, if not by the end of this year. And once, you know, Strong takes his thumb off of him a little bit, obviously Strong is punishing him and sending him a little message, you know, make him grow up a little bit. And he's going to be a better player for it, no doubt. But, I mean, Chris Boyd, people may not know this or listen. He's probably 210 pounds, maybe 215. You know, he's at least 200-plus. 6'2". And is a legit 4.35, 4.36 guy. I mean, he has elite speed, body, and ability. Once he figures it all out, he is going to be a freak in the secondary. Then you throw Hope and Hill out there. And you know, it finally hit me this week. The light bulb came on. Strong is pretty easy now. I can almost pick players out who Strong is going to offer on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, look at Holton Hill, 6'2", 6'3", you know, 205, will come up and light you up, can run like a deer, long arms, lanky and can run. Chris Boyd, Devontae Davis out of Florida, he's another 6'1", 6'2" kid that can run. What he's done is he understands what offenses are in the Big 12, and what kind of defensive backs it takes to lock people down. And you can't sit back in a zone. You've got to have big guys that can mandle receivers, lock them down, and then let your front seven get after the quarterback. And that's exactly what we're seeing. And Strong knows what he's doing on defense, even though it looked atrocious. So I think we got some good choices there. But that's my prediction right now, is before it's all said and done, I think Holton Hill is going to be great. Davis is going to be great. But in 3 or 4 years, when this class of seniors, the one that's going to be the stud of the stud, I have a feeling, is going to be Chris Boyd. If he grows up and gets his head on straight and just plays football. So, excuse me. Been fighting a little cough like everybody has. Well, let's talk about the Iowa State game a little bit, and then we'll move into our top four, and then we'll talk about that wonderful football team in College Station that just has so much success the last few weeks. And then we'll do our picks and get out of here a little early tonight. Iowa State is pretty simple to me, Matt. Going up there Halloween night, Iowa State has going to have a new quarterback. Yeah, he came in, looked pretty good against Baylor after Baylor had pretty much got a big lead. New offensive coordinator. So I think they're going to be in a little disarray on offense. I think our defense, we're going to be fine on defense. I don't think their defense is going to be able to slow down our offense. I think you're going to see Hurd hit some big passes for some touchdowns. I think we're going to be able to run the ball. The key is the first 6 to 8 minutes of the game, Iowa State's going to come out with a lot of motion. If Iowa State gets the ball first, which we'll probably defer, you get them to punt that first series, take the ball, ram it down their throat, go up 7-0, hold them again, do the same thing, go up 14-0, game will be over, emotion, the crowd will be quiet, and it'll be over, and we'll just pound out another win. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and make my prediction now. I'm going 34-13 Texas. And I almost went 41-13, but I think what will happen once we get a lead, we'll just grind out the win on the ground. Strong won't, you know, throw the ball again. So we'll probably – I think we're going to jump out about 27-6 at halftime, and then we'll grind it out, and it'll probably end up about 34-13, 34-16. So that's my prediction. What's your thoughts on Iowa State?
Well, first of all, thanks a lot to the Big 12, because I think this is the third time in the last, I guess since the Big 12 forums, that we're on the road on Halloween, which is awesome. I mean, thanks for not letting us play a home game on Halloween. I mean, I just feel like, you know, there's a lot circling around. Ames is always a tough place to play at night. It's Halloween. Place is going to be insane. So I think, you know, one thing thinking about this game is, you know, obviously the Oklahoma game and Kansas State games have looked impressive. I'm super glad that this is the case, but it's something to keep in mind is we've boat raced both of those games. We jumped out in front. And we just held the lead. And really, you know, even going back to the Oklahoma game, you know, they put a little bit of heat on us in the second half. But at no point were we really in danger of losing either one of those games. So I think if you're thinking about, you know, how does this young Texas team develop and things that make me nervous is, number one, we have looked like dog crap on the road. We've played two true road games and haven't even shown up. So I think that that's going to be the message. But until they do it, you know, it's a cause for a little bit of alarm. And I guess, you know, I'd like to at least score double digits on the road in a game would be a small victory. That's number one. Number two is just, you know, to that point is, you know, if Iowa State does jump out early, which I agree with you, I mean, they're going to come out fired up. Paul Rhodes is a cornered dog right now fighting for his job, and beating Texas might just save it, as ridiculous as that sounds, since we're not a, you know, top 10 team. But I think Iowa State somehow gets an early lead and maybe jumps all over us early, and that's where I want to see how this Texas team responds. Now, you know, even if it's 14-0 5 minutes into the game, you don't have to abandon the run. You got plenty of time left, and I don't think this team is prone to panic on the coaching staff and the play calling, but there's a different kind of pressure on herd, offensive line, defense, and everything, if you're playing from behind a little bit. So I that's kind of how I see the game going. I see us, I see it being close just because I think we'll probably have a rough start given the circumstances. Even if we do control the game, you know, in the second half, we might have a little bit of a hole to climb out of. So I feel like this is going to be a really close game. And since it's Iowa State, I mean, come on. We know it's Iowa State, so I'm actually going to predict Texas 28, Iowa State 27, and Iowa State will miss a 30-yard field goal at the buzzer to lose.
Oh, brutal. All right, well, let's talk about our top four at the playoffs for this weekend. We were on the committee, and we had the pick, and I'll just go first. No, really, one through four, any, you know, you can interchange any of mine, but again, until somebody beats Ohio State, they're going to stay in my top four because they just continue to win games, and they're 8-0. I'm going to move TCU back in this week. So TCU's back in my top four. And then I've got LSU still in the top four until somebody beats them. And this is where it gets real interesting, okay? Michigan State, I'm not putting them in the top four because they really should have had a loss. But if they run the table in a couple weeks, I'll revisit them. Alabama's right there looking in, but they do have the one loss to Ole Miss. And, Stanford's right there. You know, Oklahoma State's undefeated, but, again, they're on back down a little bit. So I'm having to go with a team that just keeps winning. They haven't dabbled themselves yet, so I may be jinxing them this week, but I've got to go with the Clemson Tigers in my top four. So Ohio State, TCU, LSU, and Clemson, and – Utah, it was good knowing you. We'll holler at you in 2036. Go ahead.
I can't remember, but I think that I put Utah in my top four last week, which if you're scoring at home, I think that's the fourth week in a row that I've put a team into the top four and they've immediately crapped the bed. And I mean, the teams I'm putting in the top four don't just lose; they just get annihilated. So that's pretty embarrassing. Let's see. I'm going to start with Ohio State. I'm keeping them number one until further notice. This Big 12 is just a mess. I mean, I'm not going to punish Baylor for losing their quarterback until we see what they look like with the new guy. I would hope the committee will do the same. So I'm going to put Baylor at number two. I'm going to have Alabama at number three, and I'll have Stanford at number four.
I think you could make an argument for all of them. Yeah, I was basically looking for a reason to get Baylor out of my top four, so it didn't take much for me. Quarterback change, a wide receiver break a toenail. I was looking for any reason to get him out of my top four. So Baylor's going to have to really show me something to get out. Baylor to me, honestly, I'm just going to say it, has become the new Aggie for me and on our schedule. I mean, their fans are so Aggie, it's just unreal. So they have replaced Aggie in my life. So I've just got where I have a real disdain for all things Baylor. So, I'm just going to get real. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. So it is what it is. But since we brought up the life of Aggie, boy, how things have shifted the last 2 weeks, sitting there at 5-0, big night game, Alabama comes in, and next thing you know, it goes bad, and the five-star quarterback, the legacy himself, curses out a coach and then gets benched and doesn't want to go back in the game. They make him travel to Ole Miss and sit on the sideline, and then they punish him and don't let him play. And I tell you what, I can honestly say, because I'm a Longhorn fan, I know what bad quarterback play looks like. I have identified it, I have sniffed it, I have lived it, and I have drunk enough beer to endure it the last few years. I know what bad quarterback play looks like. Trust me. We have seen it firsthand for years under the last few years of Mack Brown. But I don't think I ever saw a stretch of bad quarterback play that Kyle Allen did up in Oxford. I don't want to blast the kid because he's still a kid. I mean, something's not right. He obviously, he's got to be injured. His shoulder, his arm. I mean, there was times that he had plenty of time to throw, and the guy was 8 yards from him, and he threw it to the third row of the stands. So I really feel sorry for him. But now this week, obviously, Sumlin said he's opening the competition back up. So, I mean, what does he do? I mean, if he starts, goes with Murray, Kyler, you're rewarding a kid who didn't practice hard, who cursed out your offensive coordinator. So what message does that send? If you go with Kyle Allen and his shoulder's not right and he looks horrible, again, do you bench him and then go back to Kyler, or do you just go with the JUCO guy and see if he's, basically, I would have never predicted, but I mean, Aggie's quarterback position is worse than ours right now. I mean, it is literally worse than ours, which, just tears me up inside, actually. I just don't know how to control myself. Their offensive line is atrocious. So I think what you're seeing here is the offensive line recruiting has not been as well. They've lost all those first round guys, and the quarterback position is bad. And what's funny is they haven't even recruited. They're not even recruiting a 2016 guy. They went all in on this, the Mattel guy out of Arizona for 2017. But if this thing doesn't, I just don't see it ending well. I could see Kyler transferring this summer, or I could see Kyle Allen transferring. I don't see how they keep either one of them, but someone's got a mess on his hands, and people may not believe this. The clock is ticking on him. I think he's in real trouble at this point because, boy, if you go read the Aggie boards, it was as bad as – I mean, it was as bad as I've ever seen it. I mean, it's getting rough over there. So I know we don't like to talk about Aggie, but what are your quick thoughts on their quarterback position? Because I'm sure you watch the game. Something's not right with Kyle Allen because he is a good quarterback, but it's just not clicking right now with him.
Yeah, after the game, got the chance to go to one of the sports bars in Austin, and so I was able to watch a handful of games at the same time, and got a good look at the A&M game. And dude, something's got to. I mean, this is the weird situation. So I can only assume Allen was, I mean, he did get banged up in the Alabama game. I don't think he was right. There were plays all over the place that were there, throws that were there. It's not like Ole Miss's defense was, you know, all over the place. Like you said, he is missing receivers. To me, it just looked like, I mean, either the guy, I just can't imagine that a quarterback who, he's looked pretty good in times that I've watched him, that he just somehow regressed and turned awful. I think he was playing hurt. The unfortunate thing is when you have the Murray thing blow up, and if that was going on during the week, I mean, what do you do? Because you got Allen who, I mean, it looks like what they did is they told him to, you know, rub some Vicks VapoRub on that shoulder and get back out there because we're not putting Murray in because he's grounded for a week. But, God, that's a horrible approach to go into, you know, Oxford on a night game. The only thing I think just from my analysis of it was it felt like, you know, if he's not hurt and he's not able to make all the throws, you got to change the game plan up a little bit. Come up with either, you know, something, you know, a little bit shorter throws or something like that. I'm just going purely off memory, which might have been clouded by a few beers that night. But, you know, he was still trying mid-range throws, not too many deep balls. But I would have gone maybe a little bit more to the, you know, the Jarrod Hurd type of thing where make quick, easy throws when, you know, when Hurd came in, you know, just get him in the rhythm. Make something that even if he's a little banged up, he can at least make something happen. It just felt like the wheels were just kind of coming off. Now, what's hilarious is, you know, we hear nothing but, you know, how ferocious the SEC is, but A&M should have a nice little stretch here to get right. To me, that's where you come down to what's going to happen with Sumlin and what's going to happen with the attitude of the fans over there in College Station, because I think they still got South Carolina, Auburn, and Vandy. You know, those should be three wins, but you know, who knows? And then, of course, they got to go to LSU. So, but you look at your possible outcomes right now. If they end up 9-3 with losses to LSU, Alabama, and Ole Miss, it's really not that far off from what we said they'd do at the beginning of the year, you know, or what most people thought and probably most reasonable Aggies thought. So maybe things aren't all that terrible. But if you, God forbid, if you lose to South Carolina at home when you're a 16-point favorite or, you know, lose to Vandy or something awful like that, the Sharks are going to start circling. I don't see any way they go into Baton Rouge and win that game, no matter where LSU is at the time. So, you know, they've got winnable games left on that schedule. I'm sure they'll be able to get right back on the hype machine for 2016 if they can close out 9-3. But, yeah, they've got a lot of work to do. And maybe the media and everybody else will learn to calm down a little bit, you know, when they're playing a bunch of tomato cans at the beginning of the year. You know, there's a lot of college football teams out there that can pound the cupcakes, but it's what you do when you play Alabama, it's what you do when you play LSU that really shows you what kind of team you are.
Yeah, it's easy to beat the Prairie Views and the Ball Stakes of the world. So, yep, well, and the reason I even spent any time talking about them, you know, is, you know, obviously they – yeah, I mean, people don't like to hear it. Yes, they are a rival. We are not playing them now, which we know at some point that will change. And the reason I mainly brought it up is I did see four different bowl projections in the last couple of days of us and Aggie playing in the Liberty Bowl up in Memphis. So I mean, you know,
oh,
who
God.
Knows where that'll end? There's a lot of football left to be played. So we'll see what happens.
Big
there.
Big Mike's going to need a police escort down Beale Street if he plays them in the Liberty Bowl.
yeah, that could be a well. The positive of that is I know what hotel not to stay at, so that's a good thing. So, but yeah, that would be an interesting 3 or 4 days up there at the Liberty Bowl. But I mean, people do need to realize. I mean they are a recruiting rival. I mean, they're trying to sell something. Strong is trying to sell something. And I mean, we're offering and going after the same kids. I mean, it is a Cold War rivalry, but it is a rivalry. So it is what it is. Well, let's make a few picks, man. The games are just not real good this week, but there is a couple I want to pick. So obviously we'll start with a Big 12 game. Good Lord, why did my thing just refresh here? Oh, there we go. West Virginia at TCU. TCU is about a 14-point favorite. I think that's good money. I just don't think West Virginia is going to be able to hang with them. I think this is going to be ugly. I think West Virginia will score, though, on TCU's defense that's injured. but I'm going to go with TCU. I'm going to say 49-31 TCU.
Yeah, I might use this as an excuse to cut out work a little early tomorrow and see if I can't at least get over by campus to check this out since I'm in Fort Worth and got live college football in the Big 12 right down the road. West Virginia is just weird to me because when I just watched them, I actually fairly impressed with them. I mean, they've played three toughies to start the conference play, and of course they're 0-3, and I know their fans are very fed up. I think their expectation level is just out of whack. I think Holgorsen's doing all right. It's just he's just still trying to build things. And when you open with what they had, OU, Oklahoma State, and Baylor, I think those are the three. That's pretty brutal. If this was in Morgantown, I might have this as an upset special. But I think nailed it in Fort Worth. Thursday night game. I think the crowd will be way into it and should have a pretty good crowd there for that game. So I'm going to say, I think, TCU will cover. I'll say 40-23 TCU.
Next one, Pac game, Oregon, and Oregon's not very good playing at Arizona State, 3-point favorite for State. I'm going to go Arizona State 38, Oregon 28.
Yeah, so this is how I feel about the Pac-12. Arizona State seems to have turned it around a little bit. They're playing better. So they're due to just have an inexplicable loss again. So I'm going to take Oregon to win on the road 30-24.
Ole Miss at Auburn. Now, this is the game that's interesting to me. Auburn is just not a good football team. I mean, they lost in, you know, half a dozen or three times last week in Arkansas. Ole Miss is a 7-point favorite, you know, on the road, coming off a huge win. They kind of salvaged their season. I think this game will play closer than we think, but I think Ole Miss will somehow grind it out. I'm going to say 31-30 Ole Miss, and it would not surprise me if Auburn inked out a win. This was almost going to be my upset special, but I think Auburn is just that bad. They're not going to win. So 31-30 Ole Miss.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one because how does Auburn bounce back after, you know, playing six overtimes or whatever? That always makes it a wild card. The thing about Ole Miss is even when they beat Alabama, I just felt like something – they just – I don't know. I'm not a believer of Ole Miss. I thought, you know, A&M really played poorly. It wasn't that Ole Miss looked excellent. And then, of course, you know, a lot of people watched that Ole Miss-Memphis game where Memphis just completely dominated that game after the first quarter. So I do think Auburn can win this one. I'm going to say 24-21 Auburn.
Next one is – this one is actually very interesting. Stanford, 11.5-point favorite at Washington State. The Pirates got a little something cooking up there. I just don't know if Washington State's defense is going to be able to hold up to that power running attack. But I'm going to be crazy this week. This is my upset special. I think it's going to be high scoring. I think Washington State's going to move the ball. They're going to be excited. This is a game they've been building for 4 years up there. It's going to be high scoring, back and forth. But Washington State will score with about a minute to go to win the game. I'm going to say Washington State 44, Stanford 43.
Oof. Yeah, you know, it's funny that everybody just forgot about Washington State once they lost. I think they lost to Portland State in their opener.
Yeah.
And everyone said, well, the Leach is done, the Pirates done. But they've turned it around, and they're playing good football. Stanford is definitely, in the little bit I've seen of them, they will blow some coverages. So Mike Leach has got to be licking his chops at that. I just go back to when in doubt, Stanford's power running game. I think is the difference, but it will be close. I think I'll go 38-34 Stanford.
The biggest cocktail party in the world, Florida is a 2-point favorite, and I wasn't sure how good Florida was, but they very well. I mean, it took a fake field goal to beat them at LSU, and I think LSU is pretty good. Georgia's done having the running back; they're kind of injured. I like Florida to win this thing. Florida pretty much dominates this game, the big cocktail party. So I'm going Florida. I'm going to say 27-20 Florida.
Yeah, I was impressed with Florida doing it with the backup quarterback. I'm going to say Florida rolls 30-14.
Next one, Oklahoma State at Texas Tech. And this is a 3 o'clock game. Boy, I bet Tech fans wish this was a night game. I really want to pick Tech because, this has upset written all over it. I mean, Tech's at home. They're liable to score 40-something points. But, man, just as bad as they looked at Oklahoma last week, I mean, Oklahoma State's going to be able to run the ball. I'm not going to be surprised if Tech shocks the world here and beats an undefeated Oklahoma State. But I just think Texas Tech has been overvalued. I just don't think they're that good. And that, you know, so there's no way I'm picking Texas Tech. So I'm going to go Oklahoma State 43-38, Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I watched almost the entire Texas Tech Kansas game where they looked awful. And then the Oklahoma game, they just got run out of the building. I haven't checked injury. I know Texas Tech lost, I think, an offensive lineman in the middle of that Kansas game, and it just, like we were talking about before, you know, you lose the linchpin, and sometimes everything else starts looking shaky. So I don't know what their health situation is, but just strictly by going by the eyeball, I can't take them to win right now. I'm going to take Oklahoma State 33-27.
In the game you mentioned earlier, South Carolina without Steve Spurrier. Maybe Steve Spurrier will be the new offensive coordinator at Texas A&M. According to posters on TexAg, they are already negotiating with him. So that should along with Sarkisian. So that's interesting names being thrown out. A&M should win this game. South Carolina is not very good. I do think South Carolina will play inspired ball. I don't know. I really don't know who's going to be the quarterback. I think Kyle Allen is not right. I'm going to go against what I think. I think the wheels are about to come off in A&M. I mean, they're just. I'm going to go ahead and pick South Carolina. I may regret it, but I think South Carolina is going to. This game reminds me of the Louisiana Monroe last year that Monroe had A&M beat and let them back in the game. Similar situation. So I'm going to go with a wounded South Carolina against a wounded Texas A&M. I'm going to say 38-35, a last-minute field goal to just destroy A&M season. South Carolina wins.
I'm sure that would just break your heart if that happens.
It really would.
I don't know. 11 a.m. kickoff. Surly crowd. I just feel like this is one of those games where it's just going to be a, you know, you're gonna sleep in on Saturday morning. You might flip this game on or flip around the 11 a.m. games. This one will put you right back to sleep, get you a good nap before the 2:30 games kick off. I'm going to say A&M wins 23-10, just barely misses the cover.
I could see that scenario because, I mean, it just has that Louisiana Monroe type game written all over it. So we'll see what happens. Well, there you go, Matt. It's 9:02. We actually went a little longer. I went ahead and picked about three more games than I had on the original deal, but that's okay. As I scrolled through it, I saw a couple more that were kind of interesting. Well, let's get out to get up to Ames, get the win. Let's get back to 4-4, coming home, and then we'll come home to get Kansas, which, I mean, let's just say it. I mean, if we lose to Kansas, we will all be on death watch. So, I mean, my prediction is when we're going to be 4-4, and we're going to walk out of DKR 5-4 going to Morgantown with a chance to continue the streak. So let's hope that happens. We'll see everybody next Wednesday. Matt, tell our listeners where they can find you.
Sure thing. You can find me on Twitter, at UT Tailgaters. That's just UT Tailgaters, no spaces, no hyphens. And, we'll, as always, be talking World Series and football and anything else that comes up.
Yeah, I know we're one game into the World Series already, but who do you like in the series? I really thought the Mets pitching, if I had to go back, I probably would have taken the Mets because their starting pitching was a little better. But after that game last night, I just don't know which way it's going to go.
Yeah, and as that game went long last night, all I could think was, boy, when this is game one that goes 14 innings, boy, you better win it, because there's just something about that. A playoff game that goes that many innings, it's just a huge momentum boost for Kansas City, and they're up 4-1 right now in game two. So, I mean, there's still a long way to go, and the new Shea Stadium, whatever they call it now, Citi Field, I think, it'll be rocking back in New York, but if nothing changes, the Mets are going to be in a 2-0 hole. I'm just enjoying this series so far. Game one was awesome, but both these teams are pretty likable. Definitely no Blue Jays factor in here where there's a bunch of idiots on the team. So I'm just hoping it goes seven and we get some good baseball.
Yeah, and I've actually enjoyed watching it. I couldn't make it all the way to the end. I fell asleep for sure. But, that's what I was thinking. Well, the loser of this game is going to have to really bounce back, and right now the Mets have not bounced back. So we'll see what happens once they get back to New York. NBA season started tonight, so I'm going to do a quick prediction on my Rockets. I think the Rockets are going to get to, I'm going to say, 57 wins. So let's remember that I said that. So we'll know in several months. But I'm predicting they're going to get to at least 57 wins. I don't know where that's going to get them because the West is extremely deep. But I'm going to say the Rockets get to 57 wins. So if y'all want to find me on Twitter, as always, you can find me at NBHornsFan. We'll see you next Wednesday. Always remember, the eyes of Texas are upon you. Hook 'em horns. Let's get the win at Iowa State. Happy Halloween. See you next Wednesday.
There wouldn't be no Alamo, no Cowboys in the Super Bowl, no Lonesome Dove, no Yellow Rose, if it wasn't for Texas. For Texas, Fort Worth would never cross my mind. There'd be no Austin City limit sign, no Lone Star of any kind. If it wasn't for Texas. Chase my dreams. Only heaven knows just where I'd be if it wasn't for Texas. Fort Worth would never cross my mind. There'd be no Austin City limit sign, no Lone Star of any kind.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.